Hi, I'm Megan Francis, and you're listening to the Kitchen Hour podcast. I'm here to keep you company while you get dinner on the table with inspiring and entertaining interviews with bloggers, authors, food lovers, and interesting people. Hi, and welcome to episode 16 of the Kitchen Hour podcast. I'm your host, Megan Francis. Today, I'm really excited to bring you a conversation I had with Rebecca Wolf, who writes the Girls Gone Child blog. Rebecca has been blogging since the early 2000s and started her mom blog, which is Girls Gone Child, in 2005. So she's been around a long time in this space, and we had a really interesting conversation about blogging and blogging for business and blogging for the love of it, and just sort of where we both are in this sort of world of being professional bloggers, but also wanting to stay true to the reasons we started in the first place, which are love of writing and love of reaching out to other people. We also talk a little bit about holiday traditions. Rebecca shares the story of her original Elf on a Shelf, which she was doing when she was a kid in the 80s. So that predates the current craze a bit. But it was a really fun conversation. We talk a bit about fashion and Rebecca's very unique fashion sense. And we talked a lot about just writing and parenting and living life. It's a bit of a long interview because we both just were really having a good time and didn't want to stop talking. So I'm going to stop talking now and get to the conversation so you can hear it. Hi, everyone. I'm here today with Rebecca Wolf, who is author of the Girls Gone Child blog. Welcome, Rebecca.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, you are welcome. I'm excited about this today because I've been watching Rebecca's career for the last, I don't know, five, six, seven. How long ago did you start your blog? Like 2005?
I started Girls Gone Child in 2005.
Okay. Yeah. So it's been a while. And I have to say that when I remember you really kind of coming on my radar, because for a long time I was blogging, but not really in like the sort of mom blog world.
Right.
It was when you published your book, Rockabye, with Steel Press, because I was dying to work with Steel Press because I was fancying myself a very literary writer in those days and was really like, that was, I really wanted to write a memoir and publish it with Steel Press. So then when yours came on my radar, I was like, ooh, who's this girl?
Oh, really? Oh,
yeah.
Yeah, no, Steel's great.
Yeah.
I love that they're, I mean, a feminist press is, you know, they're really the only ones doing what they're doing, which is pretty extraordinary still.
Yeah, and it seemed like a place in those days, at least. I know that's changed, maybe changed ownership or got bought by another publisher. So I'm not exactly sure what's going on with them these days. But I know in those days it was really a great place for emerging writers to get noticed. It, you know, they worked with people who weren't already sort of big in the scene.
Yeah.
And they took a lot of chances on writers that I knew, which I thought was great. And they were willing to kind of publish stuff that was a little bit edgier and more out there and that kind of thing. So then I became aware of Rebecca, and the two things that I noticed, well, the thing I noticed right away back then, you had fewer children then, was that you were a young mom like myself. You had your first baby at 23.
Mm-hmm.
And then now we have in common that we both have large families. So,
yeah.
And then basically everything else we don't, because you have much better fashion style than me. And
oh God.
But we'll talk about all that later. I want to back up really quick and just go right back to the beginning when you started. So Girls Gone Child started in 2005, but it sounds like maybe you had something going on before that.
I started blogging in 2002.
Wow. Okay.
But I was blogging as a single girl who was traveling, and it was called Pointy Toe Shoe Factory, and it was all about being young. I mean, I took it down pretty soon after I started Girls Gone Child because the overlap was, it was just kind of an inappropriate backstory. I mean, I'm not ashamed of anything that
right.
I wrote or went down, but I was in a very different place at, you know, mm-hmm. Before having a child than I was after having a child. And it was, you know, it's a little like looking back on your, I'm sure you have this feeling looking back at just the archives of your blog anyway.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
It's so painful to look back on those early posts because like, oh, I can't, I wrote that and it's still there and people
right.
can read it and oh, I was the worst. So it was like that, but times like a zillion squillion because I really was, I was in a dark place and I really wanted people to know all about the darkness.
Right.
So it was very, you know, it was like the equivalent of a high school journal. You know,
yes.
It wasn't that much older than high school. So it was the post high school. I am an adult, damn it.
Right.
but I'm going to, you know, have a tantrum like a
I'm
child.
I'm going to express myself and you're all going to listen.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yes. Listen to me. Yes. Yeah. I know everything. I'm suffering and the world should too. It was very, So
well,
I took it down.
You know, I had a blog in 2001 that I wrote under just my first name.
Okay.
And I, again, I'm not like ashamed of anything I wrote, but, and I took it down, but it's still in the Wayback Machine or whatever the Internet Archive is. And I'm totally not going to give the address because I don't want anyone finding it. But once in a while, I'll go back and read it. And I'm just like, oh, I'm so glad Facebook wasn't around then because I would have totally been out there. You know, with things permanently.
This is exactly what I think when I see like the whole, the Miley Cyrus. I mean, I wrote a post about it, but I would, if I was 20, I mean, when I was 20 years old, I wish I could, I had that body and that. That platform, I would have been the worst. I would have done that and been just like, F the man. I mean, I wanted so badly to shock and awe and make people feel something. That's such a, I don't know. I feel like that's so, she's so her age. I don't know. I have a hard time saying anything about anybody because it's, you know, what the three fingers point back at you. That was always my mom's thing, you know, growing up. And I always think about that with all these stories of these young girls who have, you know, I mean, social media is so frightening for those of us who are going to grow up because, right, we can't, I mean, you can't read my old archives. I don't know how it disappeared. I closed that site and it's gone. I mean,
you can't
I mean,
find it
that
anywhere.
To my knowledge, you can't find any of it. So, my journals are all here in this room behind me and in boxes. So I feel like I have control over all that stuff, but for our kids and for these, you know, young women, men, people, I feel for them. I get that like, oh, like I want to hide. No, don't. Oh, okay. It's happening. And one day you're going to go, oh, too. And
it's normal, right? I mean,
totally.
Like you said with Miley, and that was the thing, like I cringed along with the video like everybody else in the world, but I really didn't get into the whole public debate over her behavior and all that because I was like, look, we were all doing that in bars or wherever the high school dance floor, wherever for us the venue was that we were all experimenting with all that stuff. Most of us did it. And I wasn't even a rebel. I mean, like, far from it. I mean, I was very straight-laced. Like, I mean, I partied a little bit, but I was never like that kid who wanted to be out there and be different and shock people.
Right.
And I still was doing stupid stuff all the time because that was – now, if I'd had a camera on me, oh, my gosh. I can't even imagine.
Right.
And you're a little bit younger than me but still old enough. Like, you're 30, right?
32. I've been telling people I'm 33 for the last 6 months, and I thought I was 33, and then my mom was actually, she's like, Beck, I don't know, I think, I like the sound of 33, I'm 32.
You know what it is? It's once you, when I know, I did the same thing.
Age, it's like, ah, potato, potato, whatever,
Well, once I got to 30, I started like almost like a self-preservation kind of thing, looking to the next year. Just so that I wouldn't, I don't know why. It makes no sense.
I mean,
I turned 36. I'm 36 and I already think I'm 37. I'm not. I still have quite a ways to go.
Yeah. Right. It's all the same.
Right. Exactly. Well, either way. So you're a few years younger than me and you just narrowly missed that opportunity where if you'd been, you know, just a few years younger and you were going through all that stuff, it would probably be permanently archived someplace under your actual name, you know, and there'd be no.
I wouldn't have been able to get a job for sure.
Right. Yeah.
And I know I actually had a friend recently who emailed me who said, there's a picture like in your archives of us in high school and it's really inappropriate. And I didn't even know I had it in, like, I guess it was on Flickr or something.
Oh, okay.
And she's like, will you please take it down? Because I'm going for this job interview. And if you Google my name, it comes up.
Oh my gosh.
So, I mean, not only do you have to think about yourself, but you take a picture and you tag all your friends in it. And then suddenly no one, I mean, it's. Whoa. Like that blew my mind. Cause I didn't even know I had a picture of her up. I didn't even know that this picture existed. But I guess I posted it a long time ago and I guess her name, I mean, I don't know, but so yeah, it's wow.
Yeah. If you ever Google your name and, like look at the images that come up, It is the most random and potentially embarrassing collection of images.
They're always the worst. They're always the worst.
And stuff I don't even remember. Like, it must have been tied to some account that I used to have, like, you know, Friendster or something. And I forgot it was out there, and now here it is, like, under my name. It's so crazy.
It's always like, there's a picture of me that looks like I'm pooping it, and it's actually literally taken in a bathroom, which makes it worse.
Oh my gosh.
And for some reason, that was the picture that was being circulated. Like, if like anyone did like a thing, that was like the picture they pulled for Google Images. And
oh my gosh,
I couldn't figure it was, like, could not have been. So, I mean, you know, fine. That's just the way it is. So, yeah, I mean, if the worst picture that exists of you on the internet is definitely going to be the one that people use.
Well, right.
Always,
yes.
Without fail. Yeah.
Now, did you, I mean, I know your blog over the year, but you've been blogging for a long time, and you've been blogging at this particular website for a long time. So I know right now, like, you have grown quite an audience. Is this something that happened quickly for you, where you were kind of scrambling to catch up, or was it more of a gradual thing? Because I could see a lot of really embarrassing stuff coming out if one day you have like 100 people following you, the next day you wrote some post that went viral or something. You know what I mean?
I never had any viral overnight anything. It was always gradual. Yeah. It still is. I mean, I've been doing it for, God, I mean, I've been blogging Girls Gone Child for over 8 years, and which is kind of, I thought it was going to be like, I thought I was going to do it for a few months, and that's like almost a decade. Like, I better figure out what I'm doing next, because this, I can't do this forever. This is it. Like, this is getting close to, this is, you know, I see the end here is nigh. I mean, I just, you know, I don't look at numbers. I stopped looking at my site meter about, 5 years ago, years ago.
That's good for your health.
I don't know when people write about me. I don't know when they list me. I don't have Google alerts. I don't have any of that. I don't want to know what I write, what I want to read, and I share what I think, you know, might be meaningful or relatable or interesting.
Right.
And that the rest of it, I really, you know, I have people who, I have an, you know, ad networks and an agent who helps with the sponsored stuff, and I, you know, I only work with people that I would either, you know, shop there or would support anyway.
Right.
So I kind of just separate myself from all of that, and always have. And I don't tag anything. I don't know how to, what's the word when you, oh my God.
Like SEO?
Yes.
Okay.
I don't know. I'm probably the worst, like, tech person.
Mm-hmm.
I probably could be doing better if, I mean, that's something that I should probably learn.
Well, the better is, I mean, it's all relative, and that's something that I've really, well, first of all, you know, it's funny, I just said to you, did some of your posts go viral? Then I thought about it. When you started writing your blog, there really was no such thing as viral. How would that even happen?
There wasn't. There was really like a handful of bloggers, and
right,
they all read each other.
There was no Facebook. There was no Twitter. There was no mechanism by which for something to go viral.
You're right. There wasn't.
People could share it via email, I guess. You know?
It was still like word of mouth viral. Like,
right,
I read this thing, and let me think of the URL, and I will write it down. www.
Right.
Yeah, it was.
Or in their ICQ chats or their forums, you know?
Right,
and
right.
So, yeah, it's so funny. The terminology's changed even so quickly.
Totally.
Yeah. And the game has changed, and it is, you know, it is really, I feel for people who are just coming into blogging now, and I get a lot of people who ask me like questions like, you know, how long will it take me to get to X number of viewers? And I'm like, I could not possibly tell you that. I mean,
there's no
possible way to know. And also, it doesn't, I mean, the SEO thing, it really, and I've done a lot of reading about this recently just because I'm like, well, so what, is this something that I'm just stupid to have my head in the sand about, you know, and should I just be looking into it just so I know more? And so I made a concerted effort to read more about it, and it all seems to come back to, like, write stuff that you think people will click to, but I'm like, well, I want people to read it because they want to read it, not because they saw a headline that got them excited or something, and then they read it, and it's not what I promised. Or you know, like,
yeah.
I don't want to play tricks on people.
Yeah.
So it's very complicated.
It's, and you know, this is a thing. This is, I mean, I feel like I'm like relatively just like kind of an old person in this space now, because it was, it's now like, it's all about the list, right? Like, you have to have the BuzzFeed list, 10 ways to be a better, you know, make a better pie or whatever. I mean, it's like, oh, I don't want to make a list. That's, there's nothing that, ugh. And then there's the list, and there's the link baity text, and you have to click 100 times to finish reading a post. And I'm like, can we go back to the simple days where people just, they wrote and they, you know, they talked about the things they wanted to talk about, and they wrote about the things they wanted to write about. Instead, it's just become this, the blogosphere used to be like, it used to be this kind of punk rock space, right? Where it was for people who didn't want to, you know, who weren't writing for the major publications, or who didn't want to be edited into the ground. It's for people who wanted to kind of be raw and unedited, typos and all. It's okay. You know, this is imperfect. I wrote this in an hour, you know, on the ground of my apartment. And now it's become very corporate. And look, I blog for a living. I'm no diss on, you know, this is how we have to do it. But there's also like, oh God, I mean, my favorite bloggers have not changed. They're still the people that are actual writers, or people who are writing, who aren't just, you know, trying to get, who aren't link baiting and click throughing and doing it to get, I think it's possible to make a living doing it and still write and still do what you set out to do. But I don't know how much longer that's going to be the case.
And I'm kind of hoping it's going to actually come back that way a little bit. I'm hoping.
Right.
Because, and I've noticed the same thing, and I see people who were, you know, back in that very punk rock space. I kind of, because I went through several incarnations of my blog before I launched my current blog.
Yeah.
And that one, the timing was just when the brand blogger things were starting to take off. So I kind of re-entered into a very different world, which benefited me in a lot of really great ways over the years.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
we've almost come to a point now where even when you get to a certain level there, it's like, how do I continue to compete in this space unless I change who I am or change the way I do things?
Totally.
But I also feel like people are getting weary of it. Like, I think people – I love BuzzFeed. But not everyone can be BuzzFeed, nor should everybody be BuzzFeed.
No, BuzzFeed is fine as BuzzFeed. Yeah. It's just I see the model change.
Right, how exactly.
And what people are asking, you know, what if you go to any, you know, convention, whatever, it's always, how do you get more hits? What do you do? Right. How do you drive traffic? This is what you do. Do. Anyone who's telling you how to do what you're doing, it's not – they're telling everyone the same thing.
Right.
I mean, it's you don't, BuzzFeed is doing it. Leave it to BuzzFeed. Do what you do. Like, oh, it's so, everyone is, it's just the need to be derivative in order to appease a mass audience is, I think, false. And I think that there are plenty of people out there who are making a living, who are doing what they do and doing it well and doing it, you know, and making money and doing sponsored posts and making a living doing something by actually just writing. It's very simple.
You write,
you know, you can respond to the latest pop culture events, but just write. Don't try to, you know, the top 10 reasons Miley Cyrus sucks. An open letter to Miley about Miley. It's always open letters and the lists and the slideshow about what she could have done better. And this is how I'm better than her. And, oh, it's just, it's the same stuff over and over.
And you know what? You make a really good point here. And this is something that, like, took me a year or so of angsting over because.
I know. I'm so angsty this month.
It's fine. It's early where you are. So it's noon here. So I got over my angst a couple of hours ago. But so, you know. One thing that I've been thinking about lately, or where I've kind of come to, and it's taken me a while to get here, is that, and this is such a dumb thing to even say was like a revelation for me, but like, maybe I don't have to have every reader in the world. Like maybe when someone says to me, your post should never be longer than 400 to 500 words max, because that's what, you know, most people will click away before they get to that point. Well, maybe I don't want most people reading my stuff. You know, there's a lot of people in the world. I don't need them all.
Totally.
And, but it's, you know, the problem is, and I think what's happened in the last few years, and, you know, I do brand blogger stuff as well. And it's like, they don't exactly know how to measure success. The people representing us don't exactly know how to convey how that we have loyal audiences without showing numbers, which are kind of meaningless anyway. But it's like they're all sort of speaking this language, and I don't speak that language. That's kind of the problem. So like I did a Twitter party once, and it wasn't the best. It wasn't the highlight of my existence, but it was all right. You know, I did it because that's part of what I do.
Right.
And at the end, the brand who was doing it, the agency, said, "Oh my gosh, we got like 3 million impressions or something." And I was like, "What?
How did you see that?"
Well, that I know. And I said, I was so skeptical. And I said, "What do you mean 3,000 or 3 million? Can you just break that down for me?" And so they said, "Well, what it is you have, you know, you've got your number of followers plus our number of followers. We take the number of people who retweeted you. We look at all of their followers. We just add it all up and multiply it by something. And that's the number of impressions." And I was like, wow. Okay. Well, first of all, we all know that most of the people that follow them were not on Twitter. It's pretty, right? So it's like, I feel
totally.
Like I have,
it doesn't feel right.
I feel like the whistleblower going, but wait, that's not even true. But that is the accepted like formula that world uses. And so they're all shamelessly using it because there's no shame, because they all know exactly what they're talking about. Whereas if someone asked me for my impressions, I would feel like I had to be completely honest and say, well, I mean, I don't know how many people were actually following me at that moment. You know, I feel like I'd have to hedge because it sounds like baloney.
But that's, I mean, what percentage of people are on Twitter?
At any given moment.
So I didn't even know that's how it works. So no wonder, because I'm always like, a billion trillion, whoa, everyone's really plugged in right now.
Right. No. It's all concocted. And because all these marketing people speak that language, that's the only language like I feel like they understand sometimes. But the problem is that like as a creator or writer, I don't really even want to speak that language. So I'm just becoming finally okay with that, I guess.
This is the problem. This is why I stopped reading SiteReader, because if you check your stats, then you become fixated. Why is my traffic dipped this week? Why didn't people like this post? Why are they reading this one? This one isn't that great at all. Why are they retweeting this? You become like, you realize how out of control you are over everything, because you had no idea. Because the thing you thought people would really respond to, they're not. The thing that you thought you wrote like in 15 minutes, you know, on the toilet or whatever, is getting all this love. And you just, it's confusing. And you just, I don't know, to me it distracts. I can't think about what people are going to respond to or what's going to get traffic or who's going to. Because otherwise that becomes a full-time job. And there are people who literally that is their full-time job. So for us who work for ourselves and don't have anyone to help us with that kind of stuff, it's just, you can't. I mean, it's not, it just, it's too.
Well, and it changes, and it's all very nebulous. There's no way to predict
it's
exactly.
Totally nebulous.
So, you know, and really, and the other thing is, it doesn't really matter how many people are clicking around on your site that just blew in off Google or blew in off Pinterest or whatever. What matters is the people that feel a connection to what you write and have a real relationship feel that they have a relationship with you, or at least what you're writing about. And I think that I really have hope that we're going to move back in that direction, because I think everyone's going to burn out on what's happening now.
I think everyone is burnt out on what's happening now.
And readers, I think, are going to be like,
totally. I mean, there's only so many, you know, open letters you can read about a celebrity doing something wrong, or a mother, you know, posting the wrong picture of herself or whatever. It's like, we've done it. It's done.
And it's like you get tired of people's opinions about everything. And then I feel like I need to have an opinion about stuff that I had no opinion about. I get on Facebook and I'm like, wait,
I need to write about this.
And do you ever have like those dark days where you woke up and it was fine, everything was great, and then you got on Facebook and suddenly you found yourself, I do this every like maybe once a month or something. It doesn't happen that often because then I feel like I have to detox. But I find myself embroiled in like 3 or 4 different Facebook debates at once. Like not even, and I'm not a very confrontational kind of person. Yeah. I don't like to argue with people, but it's like I feel so compelled to weigh in, I just can't help myself.
Right. Well, this is the problem with the internet. The internet makes everyone confrontational, and that's really the problem, because everyone, you know, we're all, you know, no one can see each other's faces. We're writing from a place of anonymity, sort of, and everyone is confrontational. So what happens when you get millions of confrontational people in the same space? It's just, it's a headache.
Right.
It's so, I mean, I don't engage in much on Facebook because for that reason, because that, again, it's a full-time job. Like you can't, you have to figure out what you want to do with your time. It's right. just, that is, I can't. And, I don't know if I have face, I don't have Facebook on my phone. I have it on my computer. So when I'm on my computer, which is, you know, only a few, you know, in the morning, kind of a, I do log on and I see all the, and I want to get in there and I want to say something, but then I know that's it. That's my day because exactly. someone else is going to say something and then you have to get the last word and
you should defend your opinion, blah, right. blah, blah. Yeah.
Right.
And every time I've ever done that, I end the day feeling bad. Like just this totally. Vague sense of just bad, like cosmic, you know, bad energy. And whenever I can just look at something and go, I have an opinion about that, but I don't need to share it here and move exactly. on with my life, yes. I feel so much better. So, yeah.
Yes.
Oh, well, gosh, we just spent 25 minutes talking about internet. We haven't even gotten to like fashion about- and holidays yet. Okay. So I want to, so this is going to air next week.
Okay.
So the week before Christmas, okay. literally.
All right.
And so of course, We have to like put a nod to the holiday thing, right? Okay, so I just saw that you posted the other day about how you just make it up as you go along. Tell me about that.
So I actually, I mean, I look at all everyone's like everyone their homes are so decorated and beautiful. I bought a poinsettia the other day at Walgreens, which is like, you know, the drugstore, and
oh yeah, we have.
And the guy was like, the guy at the checkout was like, why are you buying this? These are so ugly. I don't get them. I was like, this is my one moment of like trying to get festive. And this guy is giving me a hard time about my one thing that I'm trying to do. And I was like, you know, you have a point. They are, you're right. It was like the thing around them. They aren't, you know, but you know what?
With that metallic gold wrapper or whatever.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's what I'm exactly. like. And you're buying it from a drugstore, which makes it even it's worse.
It's so and, like phoned
price,
in.
Totally. And the price tag's on the outside and you can't peel it off because it's right. like stuck. So you're right. just like, ah, F it. I'm just going to keep it on. So yeah. you have the poinsettia with a price tag from the drugstore. And that is the centerpiece of our holiday decor. Like that's the one
yeah.
decorative element of our house right now, a poinsettia. I'm terrible at that. I want to be better. My mom is always so great at it. We had like the little setups and the little scene that was like her mother's with the snowy little wooden houses and the little elves. And we had an elf growing up that moved around. It was pre-Elf on the Shelf. It was like a porcelain elf.
And
we always did that growing up, but no one did it. It was like this, right. Anomalous thing. Everyone came to our house because we had the elf. But now that everyone has the elves, I'm like, I'm not going to do an elf if everyone's right. doing an elf. So right. my daughter came home from school the other day and she's like, why don't we have an elf? Everyone has an elf. And I did the like, when I was your age, we had an elf, but there were, I don't know. I just.
You're like the hipster.
No.
You're
I'm
like,
so
I
not.
Did the elf
no.
before.
I don't want to do what everyone's doing. I want to do something else. So right. I don't, but see, I don't know what that else is. So now I'm, so right. I've been like waiting for it to come to me, like some magical, cool thing. And, you know, my oldest is 8 now. He's never had a Christmas tree in our house, which is fine because, you know, we're raising him Jewish, sort mm-hmm. of. I mean, that's to be debated. It's religion, whatever.
It's
I don't really,
air,
that's another whole other, right. But I feel really bad about it. So yeah, that's kind of my way of making myself feel like maybe I don't know. We're doing this as we go along. You guys
yeah.
build your own adventure. But I don't want my kids to look back on their, you know, childhood and be like, oh, my, you know, my mom has really dropped the ball on that. We never had any, wasn't festive. Although we do have Christmas music. I love Christmas music.
Yeah. Me too.
So if you close your eyes and walk through my house, it feels festive.
And maybe like you can put some pine scented something somewhere.
Say, so like one of those Glade fresheners that like the faux, you know, evergreen
exactly.
mist. Yeah.
Well, okay. So I have to say that you've confirmed something that I actually thought was not true. And I, a couple of weeks ago, one of the podcasts I did, I had my friend Sarah on, and we were talking about the Elf on the Shelf. And I was saying, like, she said her kids are a lot younger than mine. And she was saying how she worries because she's not doing it. Her kids are going to come home from school and be like, why aren't we doing the elf? And I was totally like, nobody's doing the elf in real life. Like, it's just on Pinterest. So it's really interesting that I was wrong about that. Like, that kids actually are coming home asking about this elf.
Yeah.
I really thought that was not. I live in the Midwest, so everything takes a long time to come, you know, like the overachiever parents are mostly on the coasts. So
yes, it takes a
really long time for stuff to trickle in. So right now I don't think really anybody in our, I mean, maybe a few people, but it's not a thing.
Yeah. We have an elf at my parents' house because it's the same elf that I had when I was little, but it's hysterical. And I'm going to have to take a picture because everyone's like Instagram elf scenes are like, they're like these pristine elves and they're all, this elf, he has fallen off the shelf so many times. I tell you, he has no hands, no feet. His face is broken.
Oh, that's awesome. And we
didn't even notice. We were like,
He just is who he is. He's your elf. Do take that picture and we'll put it in the show notes because I think people would crack up at that.
We'll be there. We'll be done next week. Yeah, he's hysterical. It was a porcelain ornament that my mom turned into an elf.
It's talking about like not doing certain, you know, the things that everybody else are doing. I think it's easy when you grew up in a multi-religion home, right?
Yes.
Okay. So, but you grew up with the Christmassy stuff. Like that was your world when you were growing up. So you have that expectation, or at least on yourself, you have that expectation that that's what you're going to do. And it's so funny. Like the other day somebody on Facebook, a friend of mine posted something like, I was listening to you talk about Christmas and gosh, it sounds like a lot of work because she's Jewish and they don't do Christmas. And it's always so funny when I read something like that and I'm like, I mean, I know that's my like privilege talking, or not even privilege, but just like, it is a privilege because I'm in the cultural majority, right?
Right.
I don't even assume everyone does it, but like first, I'm always like, oh, how can you not do Christmas? The religious part, but oh, you mean like, really? Like no tree? But people who've never done it, they don't miss it. It doesn't like...
I do. I totally do. But okay. See, I grew up doing it, so I think that's why.
That's what I'm saying. Like if you had grown up not doing it, you'd be like, oh.
So this is the thing. So the reason we don't have a tree is because my husband is Jewish and he, having a tree was like a huge source. Like when we first got married and we had all the talks after we got married about like how to like parent and what our needs our kids going to have. All the conversation, because we got married, you know, I was 6 months pregnant. We'd only been together for 9 months. We were total strangers. So we had to kind of figure this out as we were going. So our first Christmas together, I was like, yeah, let's get a tree. And he was like, I'm never getting a tree ever. And my dad was actually the same way with my mom. I'm never getting a tree because a tree is pretty sacrilegious when you're Jewish. And he was raised and that was you do not have a tree in your house.
And so he's not culturally Jewish. He really like is a practical.
He was bar mitzvahed and
so it's part of his religious experience.
It's part of his culture. I mean, that was his childhood.
Right.
And he grew up in a small town where they were really the only Jewish family. So it was, I think even for him, it was even more of a thing because everyone else had it. So he had to get to the place where he was like, you know, he wanted something and then realized that he was not getting this thing. So he became very much against it.
Right.
Which I totally get. And I had a friend growing up she was Jewish and they had a Hanukkah bush, and because everyone else had trees and it was just, you know, they celebrated too. They just did it in their own way. So I was thinking maybe we'd do something like that. We'd have a holiday plant or, you know, a holiday tree and, you know, we'd still do all, you know, we do Hanukkah around the tree. I don't know. I mean, but of course we never talked about it until after we got married, and absolutely not, that's not going to happen. And this year we were actually going to get a tree because the kids really wanted one, and a house, you know, we've been married almost, you know, 9 years next month. And I think now he's just like, all right, F it, like whatever. Right. We're going to do a bar mitzvah for Archer. This is sort of like, we can do all the things.
You can blend it. Yeah.
So then it was me who was like, oh, wait, we have twin two-year-olds and a tree. Like the first year we get a tree is like the worst time we could possibly get a tree ever. Because one of them especially, she literally would climb that. It would be in pieces in 2 minutes. So we put that off. But I see the pictures. When I'm walking outside, you see like the trees lit up in the windows. And I feel physically – like I feel a pain, like, oh, it's so fun and we're not doing it, but we'll be my parents next week and we'll do it there.
Yeah.
And well, they'll be super into it.
Maybe you start with the wreath this year.
I get the Trader Joe's wreath. Yeah.
Okay. And then next year, Walgreens poinsettia.
We're like gathered by the door shivering. Like,
right.
you know, to all a good night.
Oh, that's funny. Well, yeah, I wanted to, and this is a good time to segue into that because you brought up your marriage and how you guys barely knew each other before you got married. And that's kind of the story. Your book is sort of based on the story of you going from being this carefree young girl to being suddenly pregnant and having to take on all those responsibilities. So I'm like, now that it's been a while since you wrote it, I'm just kind of curious, like looking back at that story, like where have you come from there? And like, what parts do you still really identify with? And are there parts where you're just like, ah, you know, that's all, me, all of it.
I haven't read it since it came out. I haven't read it since I wrote it. In fact, when I did the book tour, I had my mom help me pick the chapters I would read. And that was it. I couldn't even read it when it came out. I have such a hard time with it. It's like, you know, your blog archives. It's like going back. I wrote that book in 2007.
Okay.
I believe it came out in spring of 2008. I was pregnant with Fable, with my daughter. So even when it came out, it was still, you know, a good time had passed since I'd written it. And Hal and I were, I mean, I thought the ending of that book was going to be a divorce.
Yeah, I remember that actually. You were sort of a very ambivalent.
I didn't know how it was going to end. So it was like this really, it was this really strange period. In fact, when I talked to my editor about it, she's like, how do you want to end this? And I was like, I don't think we're going to be together much longer. And in fact, the first draft, he wasn't really in it at all because he didn't want me to write about him at all on my site. And so I didn't. And so people thought I was a single mom for, you know, a while in the beginning of of Girls Gone Child because he was never mentioned. And finally, I mean, now it's different. But if I write anything about him or post a picture, I have to run it by him first still. Mm-hmm. But no, I mean, when I wrote that book, I thought the ending was going to be our divorce and that there would be a sequel about what it's like to be a single parent.
Interesting.
That wasn't like what, you know, obviously that was, right. But when I talked to the editor about it, she's like, you know, so the ending surprised me as much as it, the ending really was a surprise. I didn't know. And in fact, I got a tattoo after, which is the last tattoo. This was years ago. I was very into tattoos for a minute and now I have terrible tattoos, because I was so spontaneous and like wandered into a tattoo. I have an Anais Nin tattoo on my hip that literally has a typo. Like it's paraphrased wrong. So that's me in a nutshell. Like, I love this. I was reading a book and I wandered into a tattoo shop and I was like, I love this quote, tattoo it on me. But I misquoted her.
Oh my goodness.
So that's my life.
I feel fortunate that every time I've ever wanted to get a tattoo, it's been like 1 a.m. By the time I get up the next day.
Oh yeah, it's been 1 a.m. for me too, but I've been in places where tattoo parlors are open and ready to do it.
That's not the case around here.
I have the worst tattoos. And you know what? It's actually like, it's okay. I actually kind of, now that I'm at peace with like my weird tattoos, they all have stories. They're all ridiculous. And I remember exactly where I was and how I was feeling and who I loved and who broke my heart and all and every single one. But anyway, I don't know. Well, I totally just lost my train of, what were we talking about?
We were talking about your marriage. Wait a sec. What were we talking? Okay. So you were talking about the end of your book and.
Oh, right. So I got this tattoo, which says tell the story until it comes true. And that was kind of, I got to the point sort of in my story and with Hal too, where I was like, I want to make this work. And we never got engaged. We eloped. There was no proposal. It was just like, should we get married? I think that's what people want us to do. Oh, let's do it. It was very like, we'll go to Vegas and get married and then come just drive home. There was no one was invited. It was just us. I was wearing jeans. You know, it was not romantic. There was no love feely. It just was very like, this was like,
it was a business.
Yeah.
It was fulfilling other people's expectations, which
kind of,
yeah.
Which I regret only because we weren't doing it for ourselves. And that bugs me. Like, I don't like the idea that I was doing something for the greater, you know, whomever, I mean, whatever it's, we've been married for 9 years. Like I love him. I'm happily married. I think marriage is, I mean, I don't really believe in it, but here we are, you know, almost a decade later and still doing this thing. So, But no, I mean, I really felt like the reason I wrote that book was to kind of write us together, because as it closed in on the end and I realized how I wanted to end the book, it really was, I want to be with this person. Like, this is, we have a child together, and I do love him. But I sort of had to write through that to get to the other side and realize that, like, this is my person. And it's going to be kind of a mess, because marriage is a mess. Mm-hmm. I didn't think it was going to be anything other than that, because the way it started with us, it was, you know, a lot of drama in the beginning. There was no honeymoon phase or we're in love, and because I was pregnant very early on. So, you know, 3 months into our relationship, I was pregnant. So there, we didn't have that point, so I wasn't going into our marriage thinking that it would last longer than however long it was going to last.
For however long it needed to last to get you guys in a stable place or whatever.
Yeah, I didn't know. I mean, it was an experience. Now I can say I got married in Vegas. Honestly, that's how I was looking at it when we were doing it. Like, if it doesn't work out, at least we have a story. Which is kind of how I go about everything. Like, where's the story? This is going to be a story. That's in the end of the day, like, that's how I make my decisions, which is probably sounds totally unhealthy and weird, but I really do. What's going to hold my attention in this life? You know, what's going to keep. So I don't know. That story was a story that I wanted to explore, and I didn't know how it was going to end, and I still don't. I mean, we could be together until we're 100, or we could, you know, I don't know. We kind of go through our marriage where we choose to be together every day. We're together, and that's how we've done it since we started. And there's some days we don't want to be together, and you know, that's how it works. And here we are.
Well, and I think that, you know, I don't think it's unhealthy to look at your life as a series of stories, because what else is there? I mean, that's what life is. I mean, totally. It's a story at the end. That's all there is left. You know,
this is like whenever I'm in a place where I feel really, out of control, or, you know, just the darkness, you know, grasps. I don't know. You know what I'm saying? Like, anytime in a dark place, or I think about the heroine. Like, I'm the heroine of my story. It's so cheese. Or think about the characters in books and movies and people that I love, that I root for. And those people are the darkness. You have to have that. You have to have those moments of, otherwise there's nothing. Right. So I need to feel that. And I need to be in a relationship where I feel that. I need to be in a relationship where I feel the darkness and trapped and all these things, because otherwise I can't feel what it's like to, I can't, you know, feel, get on the other side of that.
You know, one thing that I'm curious if this has been the same for you. And when you, what was the thing you misquoted on your tattoo? Because I loved that quote. Tell the story until it's true.
No, that's me. That was my story.
That was your story.
Yeah, tell a story until it comes true. I did not misquote myself. That was, that was my MO. That was my book. That's my marriage. Okay. That's been kind of everything. It's kind of like fake it till you make it.
Yes.
In a nicer way.
But it's a nicer way. And I love that, just the imagery of that. But one thing that happened to me, and I got married at 20, also was pregnant at the time.
Right.
Married the guy that I, you know, had been dating for, well, we'd known each other for like since high school, but we weren't high school sweethearts or anything like that. Right. So it was a pretty short-lived relationship, and got married because people wanted us to, you know, a lot of the same things. And I remember in my early 20s, and we actually were divorced for a while. I don't know if you know that, but we divorced and then got remarried, which was kind of cool, because then we did get to choose it, you know, It was like the first one was obligation and the second one was totally choice. And that was, it's a long story and I don't want to go into it now, but. So anyway, through all that in my early 20s, this didn't happen to me until I had kids. Until I had kids, I was fairly conventional, but something about having kids so young gave me this sort of rebellious streak. And I really wanted to be the person traveling the world in a VW bus, or, you know, like I imagined all these different scenarios for myself, and none of them were be 36, have 5 kids, live in a house in a small town. Like, none of them were those, right?
Right.
So when I got to be like 30 and saw, it was just really a wake up call for me how conventional my life actually ended up. Like, I'm very conventional now. Again, after imagining I would never be that way, and now I am. And it's like, I had to sort of via my blog and my writing sort of talk myself into it. Like, talk myself into being okay with it.
Yeah.
But it worked. Like, I don't, it's so weird, but it's like, the more I can talk, like, write through it and talk about what I gave up, but what I gained and all of those things, the more I can see it. So I think that it totally makes sense.
But you know what? It's also, there's something to be said for rebelling against the rebellion. And I think that's kind of where I am with all of it too. Cause same, like I didn't think I was going to be 30. I was just almost at 33 again. 30,
however old you are.
I didn't think I was going to be 32 years old with four kids and like a mommy blogger. Not that there's anything wrong, but like, you know, like at when I, in the, my early 20s, I thought I was going to join the Peace Corps and travel and be a war journalist. And, you know, I wanted to be out. And, you know, my day-to-day life is my life. I mean, I don't travel and all the things that I really wanted to spend my life doing. And I think at some point you get, at least for me, it was, I realized that I was, and buying the minivan and all these things that I said I would never do, that I was rebelling against the rebellion. Like, that was my... That was how I was able to justify it in my head, because I am still kind of a punk kid. I don't want to do the things that I'm supposed to do still. I really struggle with that. And it's,
unless
it's,
you make them all your idea.
Yeah, yes, yes. So yeah. No one is going to tell me to get a minivan. I'm going to get to the point on my own where I'm like, F all y'all, I'm going to get a minivan.
Right.
And I'm going to rock it. And I love my minivan. I mean, I could not love it more. And I always think about that when I see, like, there's graffiti is like the new non-graffiti. In LA, there's graffiti. People are literally just walking down the street in suits, graffitiing walls. Everybody does it now. There's nothing bad about it. It doesn't seem like anyone's breaking a law anymore. It's like, all right, you want to tag a heart on this. Like, everyone's doing it. So I always think about graffiti and how it's become sort of like the guy who doesn't tag the wall, that's kind of a more badass thing. What is he doing instead of that? Instead of, you know, spray painting the side of the boutique, who's going to keep it there because it's chic to have, you know, a cool heart thing on the side. What is he doing instead of that? Like, where is he putting that energy? Because everyone else is spray painting the walls. What is he doing? Right. And that's kind of been my, like, it probably doesn't make any sense now that I'm saying out loud. Inside my head, it makes so much sense. It's like, what am I doing with that energy? I would normally be doing this. And
we all have it. I mean, whether your inclination is to fit in or to do anything besides fit in, or, you know what I mean? Whatever that inclination is. None of us can get away from it. It's who we are. It's like it's our fabric, right? So we just are who we are.
I mean, totally.
So, and I just find it so interesting that you can be that person in many different ways of living.
Exactly. That's my point. Like, you don't have to be I guess that's what I mean about the rebelling against rebellion.
Right.
You realize that, like, there's no reason for a lot of it. There was no reason to be that way or to say those things or to want to do these things. It was wanting to be something. And really just being the thing that you are is much more interesting and much more of a statement.
Mm-hmm. So I wanted to talk about, because you said a long, long time ago, like half an hour ago, so long ago, you sort of hinted at the mom blogging thing, the mommy blogging thing. Maybe at some point coming to its natural end for you. And oh my gosh, I've been in that space for a while now because, you know, there is a shelf life on it. First of all, you don't want to take pictures of your teenage kids in the same way you want to take pictures of your adorable 4-year-old, right?
Yeah.
And also you just start to kind of, I feel like now that my youngest is getting to be school age, she'll be going to kindergarten next year. I'm sort of coming into this completely different point of my life. And I'm looking forward to, like, gosh, who am I going to be when I'm 40? Like, what do I want to do with that decade of my life? Right. Probably not the same thing. You know, I'm not going to be writing about the same things forever. So I'm wondering where you are with that. And, like, do you have an idea of where you're going, or are you just kind of swimming until you get there?
I mean, this is the conundrum, right? I mean, I don't think I know how to live my life without doing what I've been doing for so long. Cause I've been blogging. I was blogging in high school. I was doing the same thing, for Chicken Soup for the Teenage Soul, who I wrote for through high school and edited, you know, too. And
that's awesome.
I've been writing like life writing since I was 14. So I don't know how not to do that. And I really want to know how not to do that because I think it would do me some good to not be constantly writing about myself. I think that it's, I try to, you know, write about, I feel like I've branched off sort of on my site, and I'm writing about things that interest me instead of just my own ish all day long. Cause I don't think really anyone cares. I think I'm so burnt out. I feel like people must be like 100 times more burnt out than I am on hearing the same, you know, mundane whatevers. But I don't know. I mean, I'm working on some things on the side. I've been writing this script for like 10 years that in my head I've decided that I'm going to make myself and raise money and be a filmmaker. But that's, you know, I live in LA and a lot of people that I know, that's what they do. So I think there's some delusion in just being surrounded by people who are making movies. And I can't tell yet, but there's a story I really want to tell. And I mean, it's gotten to the point where it's almost hilarious how many drafts it's gone through and how many. That's what I would like to do. And I would like to write more books, not about myself, but about characters who aren't me.
Somebody else's story for a while.
I would like to spend some time with characters who are not, you know, just the ones that I live with and the ones that are in my head, you know, the ones that are myself. But I don't know. But I think I feel so, like, I really do love blogging, and I love having this kind of place where I get to go every day and write about things I want to write about. I don't take it for granted at all. And I, every time I have those moments, which I think all anyone does in any job, and I know, you know, we're super fortunate to do this as a living, like this is a job. When I started blogging, it was not a job. I was working 3 jobs when I started my blog, and that was not one of them. I didn't make a dollar off that site for several years. I mean, none of us did. There was no such thing as monetizing a blog.
Right.
So, I mean, I get to make a living doing something that I would be doing anyway. And that's an amazing thing. And I don't want to lose that.
Do you ever feel like you want to, after being sort of in this headspace for a while, and this is something I've been thinking about lately, like, I would like to do something real, not what we do isn't real, but like, I mean, something 3-dimensional. And I have no idea what that would be, but like out in the IRL.
No, totally. That's exactly, it's weird because that's kind of how my script film delusional thing. Okay, I mean, I write in a coffee shop every day. You know, I have a nanny who comes in the mornings, and I do half days outside the house where I'm writing. And when I'm done with my blog work, I work on my script and I hang out with other writers. And I need that. If I don't work out of the house, I will go crazy. Like I will get, you know, panic attacks and the whole, like, I have to get out and be around people. And as bloggers, I mean, we're alone writing about life and things, and there's nobody, we're not bouncing ideas off of anyone typically. I mean, this is like very much just us. So,
and you're in your own head, like all day long, you know, hearing your own thoughts rattling around your own brain. It's just, it's awesome at times, but it's made me much more of a homebody than I ever used to be in some weird ways, which is like, I don't know. It's like, it's finding that balance. And maybe when you have little kids, especially, and you're like, wow, I can do this from home. I don't have to go anywhere. You know, I don't have to like, or even if you have a sitter and you go out and work at the coffee shop, it's like, you're not compelled to go into an office on anybody else's time frame. And that's great. And that's very liberating, but sometimes it can become a little stifling. Cause then you're just like, well, my house is so comfy. Coffee shop is so comfy.
I know. I also think that we lose that collaborative experience and that creative people need in order to feel humble. Like as I'm writing, as I'm working on something, there's nobody telling me that I'm doing it wrong or nobody telling me that you shouldn't write about that, or it would be better if you did this. And I think as a writer and as a creative person, I would really benefit from having somebody to say, that is a disaster. Like, that is a terrible, like, you are effing up here. It would be a lot better if you did, like, basically an editor. I mean, if you're working on a team, and I think that's why filmmaking is so interesting to me, is everybody, it's everybody's, it's your story, but everybody is coming together to tell it in the best way they can. And I think that I could grow a lot more as a person and as a creative person if I was working with people, because I think I've become very stubborn because it's all my, like, I've been doing this on my own for 10 years. Like, it's really hard not to become narcissistic and delusional and all these things because you, it's all you. Like, you don't, you're not answering to anyone else. You, nobody's telling you how to do what you're doing. And that's awesome, you know, in one sense, but in the other, you, you know, we need kind of, we need criticism and we need people to tell us, you know, just, we can all benefit from having some
and just and that energy help. Too.
And you the know, energy, like, totally. Yeah.
When you know how when you get like around a group of really dynamic people and suddenly you feel like you're like more funny than you've ever been.
Oh
and you're
gosh,
like, how did
totally.
I become so funny? Like that kind of thing, you know, it's like, and then just that group energy. Yeah. I think a lot of us are probably missing that to some degree and we'll find ways to get back out there. Things are going to change. I really do think, and people are going to get more creative about the way we do what we do and find different ways to work together and collaborate and still write. You know, I want to write forever, but
right.
Yeah. So, well, Rebecca, we've been talking for a while now, so we kind of have to wrap up. I don't want to because this has been such a great conversation, but and we never even got around to talking about fashion. Okay, I have to share this story really quick then before
tell
we go.
Me. Yeah.
So, well, you know it because you were there. this is for the audience. When I met Rebecca, I think it was the first time I actually ever spoke to you. We were at a conference, and I think we've like passed in the hall before, but had never spoken. And it was last year at Mom 2.0. And I had just seen Rebecca on this panel. She's wearing this like pantsuit. And when I say this, I know you're not going to be offended. It looked like something out of the Golden Girls.
Okay.
And you walked past me, and I was like, stop. Where did you get that outfit? Because it looked awesome on you, but it's the kind of thing that if I saw that hanging in a thrift store, I'd be like, what? Like, and I would just walk on past. So, and you were so sweet. You stopped and you told me about where you got
That's my favorite thing that I wear. I love that. I love, it's like a floral sequined, it's like super loud and weird and
it's got,
I
it's like
it.
Turquoise. Does it have turquoise? And it doesn't have like the hammer pants style where it like goes up a little bit.
Yes, yeah, it's a onesie. It's like a harem onesie
onesie.
Yeah, and it's floral and it has like sequins and it's like a dream. And you know what's funny about that piece? The woman who owns the store, which is the only place I shop now for clothes and our jeans, she called me when she found that because now when she goes and she hunts for things. She knows my taste, so she'll actually call me up and say, hey, I found something that looks like you. Do you want to come in and try it on? And she actually lets me take home stuff to try on and see if I want them. And if her store is around the corner for me. But that was like the first thing she called and it's like, I think this is you. And that outfit now is like, I think a lot of it's because she saw it and was like, this reminds me of you. And I realized like, oh my God, I think I have like a style. Like this reminded her of me. That's, I don't know. And I loved it. So I felt like, I don't know. It was like this weird moment of, it's taken me up to this age and I finally figured out my style or something.
Oh, that's so funny because it seemed like the kind of thing that you would have to already have a pretty good opinion of your own sense of style to wear. And you totally rocked it. So I'm not being at all critical. I was just like,
oh,
blown
no, no,
away.
It's fine. No,
like I was like, what? I mean, but... It's so funny that would be the thing.
That was it. That was like the first thing she ever called me up about. Was like, this, I found a piece that I think you would love. And I did. And I was like, this, now I love it even more because you saw me in it, which made me feel like I had exuded some kind of energy that was harem onesie sequin-y, which is like all I could ask for. I mean, that's amazing. I want to be that. I want to be the girl who wears that outfit. So the fact that she thought I was that girl, tell the story until it comes true, man. I'll get back to that.
Oh my gosh. I love that. Okay. So now next time I'm, at the store and I'm like, hey, this looks like Rue McClanahan would have worn it. I can just be like, that looks like me. Although that's not me. That would never be. I'd be the person who would put that on and walk around feeling like the biggest dork the whole time. And then because of that, I would give out the vibe.
Totally. It's all about the way clothes make you feel. That's what style is. That's all that matters. If it makes you feel amazing to wear whatever it is that makes you feel amazing, you should wear that and wear it with pride.
I just want to kind of like tie back into something that you actually just said, and I should probably just end the podcast right where you said it, but you said just go and live your life and write your story. And I think that really sums up this conversation and also just like what I've seen of you. And that would be the advice if you could get up and give like a 1-minute panel, that would probably be your
Yes, that would, my advice would be leave this panel immediately and go write. and if you don't want to write or if you don't know what to write about, then find something else to do, because this is that is what the space that you have to find the root of the thing, right? Where did blogging come from? What was the root of this community? That is still the root. That's still the nucleus. That is what it's all about. So if you go back to the roots on why we all started and why this community developed and why it's successful, it's because it was people who had a story and who just wanted to write. And that was it. And that's still at its core what it's about. And even when you're making, you know, you're making money and doing the lists and trying to figure out how to monetize what you're doing, if that is not the number one reason you're doing it, then you shouldn't be doing it. There are plenty of ways to make money, to make a lot more money than in this space. But if you're not doing that, then you're not doing any of it. You can't.
Right.
Anyway.
Totally agree.
Lecture out.
Rebecca, it has been lovely. Thank you so much for coming on today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, that's it for this episode of the Kitchen Hour podcast. Thanks so much for listening. If you want to find out more about Rebecca or any of the things we talked about today, you can go to the show notes. They're at thekitchenhour.com/episode16. I've got great pictures there of Rebecca's amazing pantsuit that we talked about, as well as the elf that she grew up with on her shelf. And there'll also be some links to her blog and book and other things. One more note, this is the last episode of 2013. I will be back on January the 8th, but we'll be taking the next couple of weeks off for the holiday. So please do check back in on the 8th for the next podcast. It's going to be a great one featuring Rachel Macy Stafford, author of the new book Hands Free Mama. In the meantime, this is a great opportunity to get caught up with episodes 1 through 15 if you haven't done that yet at thekitchenhour.com/podcasts, or you can check me out in iTunes. All right, everybody, have a great holiday, and you'll be hearing from me in 2014.